Welcome to the Flourishing Practitioners Podcast, where we talk all things about space holding, caring for our clients, and succeeding in our businesses. We explore the wisdom from coaches, counselors, and healers. My name's Gabrielle Walker, and I'm so honored that you're here. Let's dive in. In this episode, I sit down with Tanya Edmonds Tyria, who I don't even have words to describe how much I admire Tanya, how important she is to the Akutoro Whanui Waka. Tanz went through her training and has continued to upi and support the Taurira, the new people coming through. She steps up and supports me in so many ways. I really love this podcast because Tanz describes herself as a circle that initially tried to fit into becoming a square until she realized that she was a circle and fully embraced it. And she is a really beautiful description and representation of how being you can really help you flourishing. In this podcast, Tanz talks about her nursing career and also the impact of her Māori identity as part of that career, and shares a lot of personal details about her journey with endometriosis and miscarriage. This discussion delves well into the challenges and reality of being a human being in this world at this time. Such a nourishing and beautiful listen, and I'm so grateful that you get to hear. As we went towards the end of the year, I know that this time of year can be one that has loads of different emotions for some people. Some of us are looking forward to a break. Others feel the pressure of different expectations or needs to buy gifts or planning. And it's all completely okay. I want to ping out that energy of it's okay to be a circle, even when the world feels like a square for all of you. There is a raranga maiorangi, so weaving with the heavens, wananga, starting the 3rd of February. So if you feel interested in going through, it's a 13-week online wananga that connects with some of the mātauranga of the heart of the heavens, and also involves some clearings and connection. If you do feel the pull, just reach out and I'll send you the details.
Welcome everyone. Today we are here with Tanya Edmonds Tyria. I used to call her Tams. A rongirongi and mirimiri practitioner, a nurse, a jewellery maker, a sacred adorner. She is one of the key supporters of me. We're here to have a conversation today about our practice, about spirituality and all that with her business. Mahi is Spirit and Me.
I'm really happy to be here. I know it's something that we've been trying to connect and it's just crossed over, and I've thought it was very important to make it happen.
So the question I always ask for is, what is sitting on your heart today?
So what's sitting in my space at the moment? Just feeling really grateful to be here and to be doing what I do, particularly with women. And I'm just really here to embrace the energy and see where this beautiful podcast goes, and hopefully some of you may feel inspired and maybe learn something new that you didn't know before. So that's what I hope we can bring to the space.
So you can answer in different ways. In our culture, we often share where we're from, more what we're about, but I'm happy for you to answer with whatever way you want to.
I had aunties and uncles and nan and granddad, close to my cousins and all those beautiful energetics and everything. So how did I come to do the work that I do spiritually? I think it was something that I didn't realise was just within me. When I was young, I wasn't really sure what it meant and the feels that were happening and the dreams and things like that. So I didn't have nannies that could guide me in that way. So it was a lot of just trying to discover my own way, I guess. I had my dad who would often translate dreams and things. So for me, it was a really busy childhood filled with music and sport and all those sorts of things you do when you're young. But I always felt a little different from everyone else, but I didn't know what that difference was. As I started to sort of move and get older in that, I started feeling the pull a lot more and I was always very interested in things that unexplainable things and spiritual things, which was often very hard for my parents. And I'd be asking bizarre questions and they weren't really sure how to answer. It sort of led, as I grew up and into my teenage years, it became very strong. And I started to realize that maybe there's something a little bit more to me it meets the eye, but I could see and sense and feel and hear and all those sorts of things. But I was very scared about it because I didn't know where it was going to go. And as I used to say, I was a bit worried they were going to lock me up and throw me in the loony bin. So I kept it very quiet. But gradually, as I started to sort of grow older and that, I realised that there's a lot more substance to what I was feeling, and I needed to find my way in trying to understand who I am. And that, and I went through some rough patches, as we all do, and depression and things like that, and got a bit lost in life, as you do. But I think that's all part of the learning process. Looking back in hindsight, there was lots of learning in that. And eventually I decided that I couldn't ignore what was right in front of me spiritually. And in between all that, I started training in lots of different little spaces when our daughter was really young. And then I ended up migrating to nursing, really. Nursing chose me. So it happened all at the same time. It was sort of a growing. I was moving into nursing, and then my spirituality was starting to really come into fore. And culture was always, we knew who we were. We knew that Dad's from Tokomari Bay and Mum's from the Catlin, so Mum's part Māori and so's Dad. So we always knew where we belonged. We weren't brought up speaking the reo, but we knew who we were, who we were connected to, and that was really important for us, even though we still got a bit lost in that, sort of working more on the Pākehā side of things. And that, so gradually I just started moving and weaving with nursing and following my heart and looking for others that might be able to guide me in the right direction. That was very difficult where I was because I couldn't really find anyone. So I took my own journey, started studying with my nursing. My nursing journey started as an enrolled nurse, and then I migrated up to doing my Bachelor of Nursing degree when I was in my late 30s. After that, my husband and I decided to come to Australia. For me, it was a natural process, very difficult for my whānau back home because everyone was shocked, but it was something that I needed to do for me. And it's something that I've not regretted one day, apart from not being able to have my whānau here. But it was really important for me to find where I belonged. And when I say belonged, I mean I know I belong home, the whenua, but there was more to me. It's just I needed to feel, to see, and to get out in the wider world and see where that was going to lead me. And then it just merged sometimes difficultly into my nursing, because when you're nursing and you've got that spiritual connection, it's very hard when you're seeing things and feeling things that generally you don't think others are feeling. It's very hard because as a nurse there's a certain way of working and you can't often overstep that, and that was often a little bit frustrated for me because I could see and sense that maybe what I'm seeing could help the patient, either at the end of life or whatever, find an easier way of going. So it was just a bit of navigating. And then the deeper that I got into finding my own journey and path spiritually, the more I started to embrace it and the more I started to step into it. For me, the big turning point came when I was watching a documentary about Papa Joe. I'd never heard of Papa Joe before, and I was still living at home, and I think I might have been teenage years. And I remember sitting on the couch and watching this documentary, and I remember I was just crying the whole way through it. And all the hairs were standing up on end, and Mum was with me, and she kept watching me. And there was just something about that that was drawing me in, and I could hear them saying, "That's what you're going to be doing." Goosebumps at the moment. And that really moved me, and I just remember saying to Mum, "I want to do this. I don't really understand, but I want to do this." So it was a bit of a muddle trying to get to where I was going to, but I eventually did. And I'd always been interested in miri-miri, and I wasn't so much, I didn't understand romi-romi, but I always just felt a natural pull towards that kind of practice and any kind of spiritual practice that would help others. So I just started looking and training and studying in different modalities, but I was always drawn back to the same connection. And then I'd often talk to Dad, and he would tell me stories about my great nan, who was a healer, and she would work a lot with Dad. My dad couldn't walk until he was 7, and my nan was able to heal him, and he was able to walk and stuff. So it was in the whānau, but I didn't know that until that moment, so it was kept reasonably quiet. I don't know why, maybe back in those days it was something that was kept quiet. And then eventually I started looking online. I can still remember the night, a post-night shift it was. I was looking through there and I wanted to do something. And Gabby's webpage kept coming up. And this was, we'd arrived in Australia in 2010. And I kept reading it and reading it. No, not the right time. And then something would happen. Then 6 months. it kept popping up, it kept popping up. So over a few years, because I've been here now 15, 16 years, in the end, I knew that that's what I had to do. I could feel it, but I think it was probably a little bit of the fear of stepping into the kaupapa and everything, because I always felt that I didn't know enough. And maybe I always thought you had to be special to be chosen, that sort of thing. So in the end, I made it happen. I just felt right to do it. And I sort of thought I knew what I was getting myself into. No, I didn't. If I could still remember going, and that first day going, oh, sitting in the car going, holy shit, oh, taking a deep breath, calm down, get in your lane, Tarns, get in your lane. But overcoming my fear and a bit of anxiety and that self-worth, I guess, too. And it was one of the best things I've ever done. It changed my life to the point where I needed to be shaken outside of myself. And I still say that's what happened. I was shaken outside of myself. And basically, I could see them all up there shaking me out. And then, yeah, and I just knew that I just needed to embrace it and learn what I needed to do for me as well. It's been an incredible journey for me, and it's helped me love myself for who I am and not have to try and fit into everybody else's idea of what Tarns is supposed to be like. My energy flow, I've always had high energy. I can still remember the first time I had one of the wahini on the table. Oh, my God. And I got up and I was like, oh, my God, I'm in my zone. I've got this. It just felt so normal for me to be in that space. And I was on the body and a scab came up and said, Tarns, just we've got to slow it down. And I'm like, do we? How do I slow down? I still remember that. I'm going, oh, am I going fast? She goes, just slow down a little bit. Just listen to the body, because I've always been fast, fast, fast energy. And that was really tough for me because I'm always on the go, on the go. But it was a great lesson in the fact that I had to learn to be present and not always up in the clouds. So that was a struggle for me to try and get into that presence, being present. But as time moved on, it was something that was really important for me, that if I was going to do this work, mahi, I had to be present. So how can I do that? How can I just get in my zone and just be where I need to be for whoever it is that's coming into my space? And it was just a gradual learning, and just all the different things that I've learned and the online learning and the connection. It's really hard to explain how it's changed my perception in life, really, and that it's you can't really put it into words. It's been amazing, and I still work hard out fast, but I've just learned when I need to pull back. But I do believe a lot of my nursing experience has helped me also help me keep me in my lane. So when I do move into my space and that, I sort of merge both my nursing practice and my practitioner together, because that's how I weave and that's part of who I am. Having worked and had, you know, been nursing for nearly four decades, it's taught me some really important lessons and how to interact, how to communicate, how to listen. And I have to admit, I haven't always been the best listener, but stepping more into this beautiful mahi, it's about honouring those that are coming into your space. I had to find a way of bringing myself into that space and slowing down, which has been educational, but it's been very important. But yeah, it's an incredible space to be in.
I was going
to
say, I think that you've been a really beautiful example for me of how you can slow down while still being fast. I still remember, I think it was one of the Aroha days where there was a pure view and I was like, what is going on here? It took me a while to read the situation, but then at the same time, everyone was understanding each other, and even the person who was receiving. I know that that sounds odd probably on the recording, but in observing that you haven't changed who you are, you keep being authentic, and yet you are able to listen in a different way from that example and that shift, but it's still an integrity. And that's been a really cool thing to witness.
So funny, because those that don't know, I do have ADHD, and it's been a real journey in that part as well. And that also is part of that weaving that energy as well and trying to understand. And it was really funny. And then all of a sudden, there was just this, what's going on here? All the ADHDs are all and that. And I've gone, oh, hell. And of course, you know, I just laughed because it was so funny, because that superpower, you just get in your zone and you don't realize others are looking. But it was just hilarious. The three of us just stood there and we were just like, this is so funny. It's not so much laughing at yourself, it's just that is the reality that we weave with so many different parts of ourselves. And then how do you bring that into what you do? I don't think there's a formula. I think you just find how you can embrace it and use that to do what you do, really. I'd always just think that each of us have our own magic, and however we weave that magic is the way that it's supposed to be. And having ADHD is, for me, it doesn't control me, it doesn't rule me, it's my superpower. And when it's not my superpower, then I've learnt how to deal with that in a way that is uniquely me. If it's not working for me, I've sort of gotten out of that negative mindset when things are hard and you're trying to work through things, and I just do what I need to do. It's not working today, but that's okay. Being kind and just accepting that today is just a shit day, but that's okay. And finding some humour in that, just accepting that that's the way I roll.
You can say no to any question that I ask what it was like to be diagnosed as an adult with ADHD.
For me, it wasn't really a shock. We've had these conversations work because the environment that I work in an emergency department. About 80% of the nurses there have got ADHD. So I know for some it was quite an emotionally driven response to it. But for me personally, I think deep down that I'd always known there was something, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. When the psychiatrist said, yes, you do have ADHD, Tans, how does that feel for you? And I wasn't emotional. I just said, I'm not sure whether it really makes any difference, but I'm grateful now that it is ADHD. It's not all me in my head trying to figure out, is it me that's got the issue? You know, because you're constantly thinking, is it me? What am I doing that's not right? Oh, and all the expectations of other people. But it was empowering for me because it meant that, okay, I'm not great with labels. I hate putting labels on people because it's just, I think it brings a negative connotation sometimes. But for me, it was like, okay, I've got ADHD. Where do we go from here? So then it came the discussion about medication and that. And at the time where I was sitting, I knew that I was just a little all over the place. I just needed something to bring me into a space where I could take a bit of time to be kind to me and to figure things out. Once that we had the discussion, I said, I went on to medication. So I have what we call Dexies. So it was just research. I think it's really important you research that whatever you decide, that you sit with that and that you hold that and allow yourself to be empowered around that. And for me personally, it's been the best thing that's ever happened in that way. And I think back to the day and I'm going, oh, I have no freaking idea how I even managed to do enrolled nursing, a Bachelor of Nursing degree, had to be a mother, had to work. But I think part of that ADHD is that you have so many things that you can to do that. It's so magical in so many other ways that we do put things in little boxes, but it doesn't have to be your worst enemy. I think that's what I try and say. If you allow it to be that, then you're allowing it to take control of who you are instead of trying to find a way of embracing it and finding yourself in it so that you can weave your own magic whichever way that is. So it was, and it's just opened up conversation in our whānau. And it's been really, really important for that because all my siblings have ADHD and it's come from my mum. Thanks, mum. And once I started learning more and understanding it, it was just like a light bulb went on. Just this crazy high energy whānau that was always on the go, 150 miles an hour, four girls. And, you know, I thought, oh, my poor mum. But we've been able to talk about it, and now what's happening in the whānau is that they're talking about it and there's been some new diagnoses. I don't want to sort of make myself like an example, but I say, you know me, you know who I am. I've not changed. It's just a part of who I am. So it doesn't have to be the scary diagnosis that's going to rule your life. And I think that's really important, and that's sort of how I've liked to sort of live my life, is that, you know, here I am, imperfect in every way, but whatever's happening doesn't have to be that way. If you choose it, you always have a choice. It's your choice how you choose to weave with it, but embrace it as much as you can. So for me, it's been huge, and it's helped me within my practice as well in a way where I'm able to bring myself and be in this space instead of like every 10 minutes my brain flicks up, oh shit, the washing's in there, because my brain's always on a high alert, and it's allowed me just to soften, to come into my zone and honour those that come into that zone. And I think that's really important. And I realise that if I'm going to be working in this mahi, it's important for me to be able to link to be this, because that they are coming trusting that you, and not have the brain going up here, not have that drawer open. And it hasn't been easy, but it's something that I've been striving towards. So yeah, it's been empowering.
Thank you. I think it's such an important discussion, and I know that there's a lot of chat around the labelling and the not, and especially even the thoughtful mainstream as well, but also in the spiritual community where people don't love it. It's like, if it's empowering to you, then it's an empowering thing. And if it isn't empowering to you, then drop it. I found it empowering too for me, not taking medication, but knowing and finding out things about it. It's been so cool to learn that the things that I always thought were wrong with me are actually like just a part of that brain. As soon as you accept it, the energy just drops around all these things I was always trying to make myself be or do because other people said you had to be or do that.
I think absolutely.
How did that cultural aspect and stepping into the Rongonomi Mirimiri space feel?
Scary.
That even though you knew who you were and where you came from culturally, like stepping back into the mahi, like how did that cultural aspect and stepping into the Rongonomi Mirimiri space feel?
Scary. That was a bit scary for me, because decide to do something, it's all or nothing with me. That's always been the way I've worked. And it was really scary. And I remember saying to Mum, I said, I know it's where I'm meant to be, but, you know, maybe I don't, because I can't speak fluent Māori, and maybe there's things I'm going to do wrong. And I had this perception in my brain, you know, like back at, I'd get growled at, or, you know, I still remember back on the marais when I used to visit my auntie and uncle in Rotorua, you know, your nanny used to smack your hand if you did something, you know, that sort of thing. And there were a lot of other negative things that happened growing up that really, and I said, if I'm going to do this, I need to go in, open mind, open heart, and whatever comes, comes, and embrace. This is part of my journey. So it was a bit scary because I wasn't really sure. I didn't know you, but the energy that I was getting when I was reading who you are, where you're from, I just knew that's where I needed to be, because I'm all about the feels, as everybody knows. That was scary for me, but it's also been enlightening for me too, not to fear that. And that it is a choice, part of my learning is still coming towards that. And I know it because I can feel it. I can't explain it to people. I just know that slowly but surely, Tarns, in her own way, will embrace those parts of what I need to be. For me, it was just one day I was at home and I was really struggling. And part of my gift is being able to tap in and take a moment and tap into the spiritual realms and things like that, and just asking, as we put out there. And then my nan, who I'd never met, who's been part of my journey throughout my life, just popped in and just basically said, you are who you are, and you have always been good enough, and you're good enough as you are. And she said, you know what, things need to be shaken up a little. And she said, and that causes fear with others because some dislike the status quo. And she just said, and you're a shaker. And I just remember those words, and I wrote them down, and I had a bit of a cry. And I'm going, shit, it wasn't me. They were the ones that had the issues. It wasn't me, but they just threw their shit on me to make me feel awkward in my own culture, awkward in the way that I do things. And then it was that day that I decided, no more. I know that this is where I'm meant to be, so I'll do what Tarns needs to do to move through that and do the learning that I need to. But yes, it was scary in that. But when I got to meet you, to listen to you, what the expect in my brain, and I'm going, this is so different than what I thought. I thought there'd be this structure, this karakia and all these sorts of, but it was like, it's not like that. And I think it was that really brought me in 150%. And I just thought, this Wahine over here, she's pretty cool. Like, you know, she's the same. Be who you are. Accept who you are. Bring what it is that... And that really meant a lot to me, because that had been my biggest struggle. How do I bring me into the things that I want to do with healing and being just... And that, and it made so much sense. I can't put it into words either, but it was just like, the light bulb went off, the blinds flicked up, and I'm like, okay, I don't have to know everything. I know it in here. I know who I am in my heart. And that is what the change was for me, was that it was always good enough. But you had to trust and connect with those that you needed to hear that. And that's why I love the Waka. I love supporting and feeling, and I get so much from it. And I learn every day, and I get a bit emotional about it, because I think for me, my journey has been so tough in so many ways. But for me, it's about giving something of myself to something that's so beautiful. And that's why I do what I do, because I love to. Yeah, it was scary. But I'm glad I stepped out of that and just pushed myself, because I was at that door. I'm going, oh, I don't know. But I just felt the push. All right, pull your big girl knickers up and just get on with it. And I'm so grateful that I did. So grateful.
I know that a lot of the nahi in the space that you focus on is more to do with the kupu huri. Can you share, if you feel called to, what draws you more towards that, or your journey with that?
There's a bit of history for me. I've always had a real pull towards women's health. I mean, there's so many things and how it's changed my life by working with women in particular. I think for some of our wahine out there, they're struggling. It's not that I'm adverse to working with the tāne, but it seems it's the wahine that are drawn. And for them, and the receiving and the sharing and the giving. And I think a lot of that really came to the fore through my early stages of nursing, when I was nursing and that. And I went through my own diagnosis of endometriosis. We had our daughter when I was 21, and then we left it for a few years, as you do. And then I struggled with infertility. I had multiple miscarriages, misdiagnoses. But I think for me, when I look back at that time, it was a really shit tough time. What the hell? I was an emotional wreck, trying to always be strong, hold space. I'm a mum, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter, I'm a sister, I'm a nurse. For me, I knew innately there was something not right, but I wasn't sure what it was. The endometriosis diagnosis didn't come till much later. So by the time I was diagnosed with that, I'd gone through so much of the emotional baggage that comes with that. And it was the doctor saying, it's in your head. I don't know what you're complaining about. You're in pain. Women have pain. You know, that's just the cycle. And I kept going, but it can't be, you know. And the pain used to bring me to my knees. I'd be on the floor in agony. And I'd just keep that to myself, hold that in. I wouldn't show it around our daughter or my husband. I thought, oh, God, you know, being the martyr, carry this martyr badge quite well. For a while I did, for a few years. But it was a real struggle trying to figure out. They're saying that it's okay. I'm a nurse. I should know better. I was in a really bad place. I was depressed. I didn't know that I was depressed, but hindsight, I was depressed. Mentally, I might have seemed okay on the outside, but deep down inside, I really hated myself. I couldn't understand why this was all happening to me. You know, why I can't have more children, because both my husband, Ty, and I really wanted more children. And in the end, I must have been about 25. Eventually, I basically told my GP, you don't get to tell me what is wrong with me. I want to see the best gynae. So eventually, I got an appointment, and he put me on some medication. And the only way of diagnosing endometriosis is through a laparoscopy. So I had multiple ultrasounds. It's going to show, it'll show fibroids maybe and things like that, but the only way that we know of, even in today, I'm talking 30-odd years ago, it's laparoscopy is still the only way of diagnosing. So I remember going in, having that, and I still remember the day going there on my own to the specialist rooms and sitting there, and I just knew. I could feel it before I walked in the door, and I sat down, and I was trying to brace myself for it. And then he just said, I'm really sorry, but unfortunately you're not going to be able to have any more children. The endometriosis had basically destroyed my fallopian tubes, so they were sort of pulled down. So fallopian tubes should be out and ready to capture the egg so that you can become pregnant, but mine had actually been pulled down by the endometrium. So it's like a spider web that each month a woman will have their bleed, comes out and it sort of sticks, and then as you bleed it all drops away. That's a simplifying version. But with a woman with endometriosis, that doesn't happen. It was from my experience and from the emotional stuff that I went through diagnosis and eventually having a hysterectomy in my late 20s just so I could survive and have some kind of life because there was no life at that time with endometriosis. Then post the hysterectomy, there was a really grieving process. I think that's really important. You still have to allow yourself to grieve for that part of you that is no longer there. So that was a really hard time, but you work through that. So long story short, all these things that were happening to me at the time had driven something deeper inside of me, so that when I was nursing or a woman would come and they'd tell me their story, and that's a privilege of being a nurse because you get to see people sometimes at their worst and you get to choose whether you're going to be that person that uplifts them, just flicks them off a lot. I always felt really drawn to women, or they'd just appear and we'd have these conversations and then I'd try to empower them. Not tell them, because I'm not there to diagnose and we can't do that. I would listen to their story and in my head I'd be going, if they don't have endometriosis, it was just their story, the pain, the reject, it was just too familiar. And I would try and empower them. This is your body. This is your womb. Don't take what a doctor says as number one. Don't do that, because I said you're doing yourself a disjustice in that. And I get really passionate about it and I can feel the passion coming in. But I try to empower them so they don't go down the same journey that I did. And the older that I got and the more I started moving and delving into the spiritual work and working with what, you know, become a real drive. And then when I stepped into the Waka and that, and then I remember a conversation, I remember saying to you a while back, saying, oh, I really love things to do with the womb. And then you said to me, oh, Tom, doing this, I want to lock and load me, I'm in. I'll just lock and load me now. I don't care when it is. I don't care how much. I'm coming. And that was the most amazing and incredible experience, because it made me look deeper into not just the physical side of it, but also the depth and what we hold as wahine, and listening to the echoes. So it's been a real big thing for me, womb healing, just in that energy. And I'm finding that the wahine that are coming to me, and that they have so much that they've hidden and not said. And then when they start to kōrero miri, and that, and they'll just say, oh, I've never told anybody this. So we hold it, and that, and miscarriages and their diagnoses and what they've been through and the heartache. So that's what's really empowered me in that area, is to try and be somebody that can support and afi them, whatever decision they make, but to also bring it back to that nursing, because I think that's really important too, because I think when we work on the tinana, the body, with women that have active endometriosis or POCS, I think as practitioners, we need to be aware there are certain times of their cycle. Some of these women bleed continuously. There's no stop in their bleed. Passing clots the size of a soft or a rugby ball. And I know from personal experience that they are tender, they are in pain, they know they need something, but I'm always very aware. So I think as practitioners, I think it's important that we understand the basics of how the endometriosis works within the wahine's body, because it does affect the practice when you're on them. So I tend to not go on them because they're bloated. So if you met, and most women often will be hands off, they want some healing, but it's not. So I'll just say, well, let's just wait. So that's why I'm sort of passionate about it and that. And I think as practitioners, just to be aware that these things are really important to the wahine that are going through this, and that they need that support, and to be open and say, you know, today's not a good day, but I'm here for something, for some healing or whatever kind it is. So that's where my passions come from, just to help wahine, you know, to avoid all the traps that I went through. And that's just my personal experience. I'm sure there's plenty of out there that have experiences too. And if I can give that and help them in a way that serves them well and they can make their own decisions, knowing they're not alone, I think that's really important. And that's why I just love what I do.
I'm just going to go back a little bit. I wonder about the impact that the miscarriages had.
Yeah, so the miscarriages had a lot of impact, because you build up this, you have this picture in your brain. I'm going to be able to pop out all these kids. And my husband Ty is from a family of 16. And I'm from a family of five. And everything's going to be lovely. And actually, the real reality is it's shit. It's not going to go that way. And the miscarriages took a lot of emotional energy. It was painful. It was just a really shit time. I wanted to be pregnant so much that I caused a phantom pregnancy. And I'm not sure if you ever heard of a phantom pregnancy. So when a woman wants so much to be pregnant and she's just so in that space of being pregnant, she begins to believe that her breasts are tender, all those sorts of things are happening. And I was convinced I was pregnant and went to the GP to be told I'm not. And he said, what you're having is a phantom pregnancy. I was absolutely devastated because I had actually convinced myself that I was pregnant. I wasn't. So, and then the miscarriages and just the pain that came with it. I'm sure there are many out there, if they hear this, they will identify. So it's like, oh, I go through this whole bloody thing again. I'm talking 35 years ago, so there have been lots of advancements since then. But I think still that psychological part of that is still very real even today.
I remember in that, even one of the kōpū, and we did that ceremony for all the miscarriages, and we would light a candle for each miscarriage, or it could be yourself or your loved one. And there was the whole circle was full of candles. And that was from the group. Yeah, I know, me too. I feel emotional. It's like honoring that and seeing it visually was not a shock because, you know, but also just being like, there's this representation of probably some of these that we haven't even talked about, or because it would have been in a shorter term, or all this pain that women bear.
Because we have to just carry on.
Yeah.
And this is what I find when we're doing this work is that we have to carry on. So you have to survive. So what do women do? Do what they do best. Okay, cry, cry. I haven't got time to grieve. I just got to put that aside because I've got a family, I've got to work, I've got a husband. And you just shove it in the background. And then eventually what happens is that you can't shove it because there's no more room. So where's it going to go? It's got to come out somewhere. And generally it's an emotional release, or when we get angry, or we just hold so much inside of us. Because it's survival. We go into this fight or flight. What do? Oh, number 5 miscarriage. When I think back and I keep thinking, shit, am I the only one going through this shit? And what I've realised, when you're going through it, you feel alone. You feel like no one gets you. You've got to keep it quiet, you know, and you don't talk about it. Why don't we talk about it? Is it a cultural thing? I don't know why we don't talk about it. The fear that maybe, well, I felt a failure. I couldn't even get pregnant. I got pregnant one time. Why can't I bloody get pregnant again? Well, I can get pregnant, but I can't hold the sperm, you know. And I was much younger, so emotions were everywhere. And freaking hell, when I look back, I thought, oh, I was bloody psycho. But in a loving sense. But it takes a toll on your body. It takes a toll on your mind. It takes a toll on your relationship. I look back and think, I don't know how the hell tied I was still together, because it was a really, really rough ride. And I look back and I think, shit, we were that close, you know. But even when you've got other children, the effect it has on the children, you know, you're trying to protect everybody. Mothers protect. Don't show them that's how you're feeling. Keep it close. But how do you tell a child? I still remember the day when I was in hospital and Shelley came to me and said, it's okay, Mummy, if you can't have any more babies. I'm your baby, eh, Mum? And I go, yes, you are. And I still remember saying, I'm so sorry, I can't have more babies so you can have a brother and sister. And I still get emotional, but I think it was important that at that time I acknowledged her, that Mummy's sick. And Mummy's sick in her tummy and she has to have everything taken away, so I can't have any more babies. She brought it up a week ago and she said, Mum, I remember quite vividly, you know, when I was younger and you were going through a really bad time and you spoke to me, you told me that you were really sorry that you couldn't have any more babies. And she remembered that, and she's 38 and she was probably about 5. And she said, I remember that. And she said, I remember you holding me in. But you didn't cry. And I go, no, because I couldn't. Because I was trying to be strong for you and your father. I couldn't cry. But I cried a little after they left. So that's what we do. We put things so deep inside of us that we've got to carry on. I don't know why we, as women, I guess, I don't know why we feel that we have to hold, but we hold fiercely to protect those that the fear of them seeing you softer or weakening, being strong. I don't know the answer to that. But yeah, it was a very hard time. It's a lesson, all of that pain and that you bring in other ways. And that's why I find sharing that with other young that are going through diagnoses or having to come to that decision, they've got to have a hysterectomy, you know, they're in the early 30s. Who wants to do that? And letting them know they're hurt.
I didn't know until my friend had a hysterectomy that you actually been going through menopause.
Yeah.
So even if you're like 30 or I had no idea. When it happened to her, I was like, did they tell you about that? And she hadn't even been informed.
And this is what I've also been learning too, that in our last kupu huri, it was really interesting because I was just standing on the periphery and some of the wahine that were there, I was just listening and it was really interesting to me. And some are talking about how they're going through a tough time with menopause, the symptoms they're having, and then, of course, endometriosis came up. And I'm going, in my nursing head going, well, was the GP or the nurse in all of the picture? And then when they finished in that and they said, oh, Tans, what's your view on it? I said, my view on it, that's shit, because that's stuff you should have been informed about. That's stuff that's important, not just because we're Māori women, but we are a woman. And I said, so you had no idea what happens when you go through menopause. And today, modern times, where things are supposed to be so advanced. And I used to say, you need to change a GP, because that's crap. I said, because quite frankly, that's simple. Did he just give you the tablets and just said, oh, you're basically, yep. And I said, no. I said, that's wrong in every sense, because part of accepting those parts is the education behind it and knowing that you're not alone. And it was just really interesting. They didn't know they were going to have all these symptoms. And I'm like, shit, that's a wake-up call for me.
I remember picking my friend up from the hospital and I only arrived to the last bit, but her partner had been there and she was drugged up and they were talking to him. So he's not taking it in. She's drugged up, so she's not hearing it. And I'm sort of trying to listen because I'm like, she's going to want to know this. And it was just like shocking to me. I was so surprised.
Practitioner, and she has studied, she's got her own business, she does injectables, but her big love is she's got her a yoni clinic. And she's done a lot of training with menopause, endometriosis, her passion as well. And just learning from her that this is very common. We were talking about it this morning and the passion was going. We were talking about, she said, Tans, I'm telling you, I've been to conferences and everywhere, and women are still not being informed of these simple key things. And I said, well, where is it breaking down? Where is the breakdown? Because whether you're Māori or not, we are women. I said, where do they go? Where do they get to air out? You know, I'm going for a shit time. I don't get what's going on. They've given me this medication. What's out, you know, there's so much that's out there for women around menopause, endometriosis. That is a key thing. Women being informed about some of the symptoms. Doesn't mean you have endometriosis. It means that you're being more aware. If you've got mums that have had endometriosis, if you've got nannies or aunties. Back in my day, they said it wasn't hereditary. But I always felt it was because my mum had it, my sisters have had it. So now they're saying, yes, it's hereditary. You are probably 70% more likely to get endometriosis if there's a hereditary component. And it can be passed down to your daughters. So that's why I say it's important that when mums are informed that they can share that. Our daughter, she was having issues when she was a teenager and my issues started very early on. I had my first bleed at 9 and they were painful right from where we go. So I used to really say, you've got to take care of it. I don't want her getting to the age I was and being told, sorry, you can't have babies. Sorry, I don't want that for her. I don't want that for any young woman to get to that stage where they can't have it. And that's why when I'm at work in my ED mode, when I get women coming in and I'm reading their history and I'm looking, and then I go in and I just buzz around doing what I do, and then the conversation starts. And that's when I feel that it's really important that in that role as a nurse that you have the power to be the change agent, to encourage them to take responsibility. It's your body, not their body. What do you want? You're 25 and you're already having all these issues. That's when I just take a breath and start to talk and say, empower yourself. There's some websites you can go on, look, see, change your GP. Whatever it takes, change your GP. because they're shit at what they're doing. I just tell them straight up, change a GP or find a women's clinic. They'll support you in that, whatever your diagnosis is. I want you to have babies, but the way you're going, just pushing it under the carpet, it's not going to help. Because I don't want them to go through that pain, the heartache of, shit, I should have listened to maybe that, what that nurse, you don't have to remember who I am, but just that voice at the back of your head. And that to say, shit, I should have followed that through. Now I'm 32 and now I can't have kids. I don't want that for any young. And that's why it drives me.
That's brought something really beautiful to our waka, that combo of the nursing background and clarifying the physical needs. I know that sometimes in spiritual work, there can be almost a pushing aside of some of the medical aspects because we see that as Western, and then we've got this Māori aspect, but also empowering the person. So what they want and choose is valued. Is there anything else in that emerging that you can think of? It can be around the women's or other.
Yeah, I think that my nursing had always been leading me to this personally. I think when I first started nursing, I'd been always been pushed to do that spiritually. I might not have known it at the time, but the more I look back and the things that sort of transitioned through my nursing career, the beautiful patients that I cared for, their whānau, it didn't always go my own way. I had prejudice, yes, absolutely. I'd be bullshitting if I said I didn't. I had nurses that would make my job difficult and smart comments about, oh yeah, you're just Māori, you know, you're just that 13% that they let in the door, all that kind of shit that goes on. But I'm grateful that I had the parents I had because they made me see that they're only a small proportion. But it was tough, and I was stepping into a profession where I could only count probably, if I was lucky, 5 Māori nurses at the time I started, and that was in the late 80s, and walking into a big department where you're the only brown face. So for me, it was not about, it was a portion of it was proving that I'm just as good as anyone else, but it was also important that they saw me for who I am, and then what you see is what you get. You know, I'm a Māori woman and I am proud of who I am, but I'm also Pākehā and Irish, and I love every aspect of who I am. What you see, they say, oh, you know that brown nurse. We used to get comments and that, and I go, oh, you're talking about me? You mean Tarns is actually my name? And just correcting them and going, no, you don't get to say stuff like that. I give everything into a profession, and that, so were many challenges, not just from patients and their families, not wanting me to look after their parent or whatever. That's some of the comments that I had, and me defying everything and going, well, it's me or no one. So that's your choice. It's me or no other nurse, because there are none. So you take your choice. And having to be really profound and not rude, but direct, that I am it. So you make your choice. And that was really a real strong learning curve for me, but knowing that I was supported by my managers, and knowing that at the end, after caring for a patient that was not happy to have me as their nurse, that they put their arms around me and thanked me for the lesson that they learnt, that they realised that they were wrong. It was very emotional for me because you put so much energy. I am who I am. I'm the same for the other 5 patients that are in here. So I found that nursing was a real challenge at times, but and I did the best I, you know, in that. But being Māori, I felt, was a real asset, and it brought a different energy, and you build that respect in that, you know, wasn't perfect, but, and they trusted me, and they would come and ask me questions if they had a Māori patient, and I was able to share just my personal insight, and it helped them a great deal. So I feel I've been very privileged at a time when I did my nursing to be able to break down some barriers. That was never what I intended to do, but it came my way, and I refused to allow that to go without being confronted. And that, so yeah, so it's been an incredible career, but it's helped also in the way that I weave in my practice.
Was that across New Zealand?
No, that was just in the big hospital I worked in. Well, that identified with Māori, but there was probably only 2. Brown skin. And it's quite funny that you just know each other. I still remember, this is just an experience I had, was when I was trying to do my enrolled nurses training, and that was a big thing for me. Shit, there was like, enrolled nurse, are you kidding me? This little girl from Glengarry, from the hood, they used to call it. So anyway, I remember I'd studied really hard. I was crap at maths, crap at science, but I was determined that I was going to just give it a go. I had nothing to lose. And I remember walking into a room that had 200 and something applications. There was only 10 positions. And I walked into that room, and talk about feeling a minority in my own country. I walked in there and every person looked at me with Pākehā, you know, white-skinned. And I stood there and I went, oh, they think I'm a threat. I could just feel the energy drop. It was just something, and I felt like a minority, and I'll never forget that feeling. And I swore I will never allow anyone to make me feel like I'm a minority. That was scary. And then I was just standing, everyone just basically ignored, and I just stood in a corner going, okay, Tums, bring yourself in your lane. And then this beautiful wahine come up, and she just introduced herself, and she said, I can't remember her name now, but she said, I'm Māori too. And I said, oh, did you get the feels as well? She goes, yeah, they did the exact same to me. And we just hugged each other, and, you know, I haven't seen her since. But so, yeah, that was a real experience, one I've never forgotten.
When I really hear a story like that, I'm so grateful for what you made possible for me. Like, I wouldn't exist if it wasn't for these examples. So I'm really grateful to hear that. The year I went to school, for example, was like the first year that Te Reo was taught in school. And I'm always so grateful for those who did this thing. That's part of why I've been asking about it. I think most Māori people have their own identity battles in whatever different ways, whether it be through like not knowing our whakapapa or not knowing our land, or maybe having dark skin, having white skin. There's all these different identity things that we've been given.
Yeah, it's really good to revisit, because something that my mum really instilled in us, and she's, and my dad would say, you be proud of who you are, but you remember no one gets to make you feel any different. You are just as good. And my mum was 5'1", but she was a powerhouse, and she went through her own discrimination, and she instilled in us, well, I think it was born in us, but she really empowered us to stand up. And she said, if you stand up for what you believe, that's all that matters. It doesn't matter, there's no wrong or right, but you stand and you make sure that when you do your standing, that you stand tall and don't let anyone ever drive you down onto the ground the way that they did to us, you know, at that time. And I'll always be grateful for their support in that way. So just weaving that nursing has been a real beautiful thing for me. And sometimes it has been hard, and I'll tell the story. And I can remember vividly being in a resus. So when you're part of a resus team, is that each nurse has a role. And CPR was going on, and I was just doing CPR. And you've got to concentrate, stay in your lane. And then all of a sudden the spirit popped up and I'm going, oh, holy shit. And I'm trying to count the thing, and I could feel this presence beside me. I'm going, oh my God, oh my God. And I'm going, not the right time, not the right time, not the right time. And I'm trying to count. And the girls were like looking at me, and I'm sort of giving them the eye movement. And they were like, and they were going, are we ready to defib? And I'm going, 28. Oh yeah, we're ready to defib. And I'm hands off. And anyway, I tell that story because it really made me aware that, you know, they're sort of things that happened, and they're things that you can't go, oh, guess what? I just got a visit from a spirit while I was doing CPR. You know, just things like that that have happened in my career. Or if I'm standing somewhere and then something, and I can feel, and you know that you want to say something, but you can't because you're in the role as a nurse, and you know that there's somebody there trying to get, but you've just got to find your place and let those that are wanting to come through know, I love you, but this is my working life. I cannot, I hear you, I see you, but you need to move on, kind of thing. And that's just been a learning thing for me. It was a challenge and many different things, but when I've been looking after my Māori patients, it's been such a beautiful experience as well. And to have my peers look to me, not that I ever sought or seek, come to me and say, we have a kaumātua who's, you know, we're not sure. And I go, that's okay. Oh, I'm not 100%, but let's just see where we are. And for managers and that to allow me to step into that to support the whānau, having known the whānau and knowing, and that was an incredible experience for me, taking care of one of our local kaumātuas who was at end stage and stuff, and being with the whānau and staff, just respecting that space and that. And so, yeah, it's just been an incredible career, and being able to bring all that into what I do is so special. I sort of try to honour all those that have taught me the lessons that I've needed to learn to be able to do what I do in a way that's authentic to me. Crazy as it might be at sometimes, I'm starting to pull a little bit more away from nursing, although it will be 60 in January. So I'm looking down the pathway of where this is going to go. So yeah, so it's been an amazing journey. I just feel there's so much more out there to be able to weave and to do, and magic and craziness and everything like that.
What do you think is the life for you in the next steps?
It's funny, I've been saying, because this year's the year of the Aquarius, so there's lots of shifts coming to, things are coming to an end, you're shifting and shaking off, it's the year of the snakes, so you're shedding and all that sort of stuff. But for me, I feel that my nursing is going to start becoming less and less, and I really, for this next coming year, I really want to fully embrace what's coming, and I felt this coming year is going to be big. Can't explain it. It's just a feeling we get at different times of our life. And this is a it's going to be that big change. And I basically said, well, just bring it on however it comes. And that, but I also have to remind myself that I have to take a breath, because I do. And those that know me well in the walk.
Do you know what though? I really value, I think we had something, I was trying to think earlier on how to describe like your essence with that. There is this, you see what needs to be done and you do it. It's so powerful because it is so loving and supportive in the moment with whatever it is.
I think it's just something that you quietly just go about it. And I think, you know, the capacity to love, I think that was instilled in me very young, you know, as with my nan and just watching my mum and aunties, you know, I've always had a deep capacity to love, always wore love on the sleeve, but it hasn't always it's been to my detriment sometimes, but that's learning in itself. But it's just in the space that you've created, it's a space that just feels right to be. And when people say, what do you mean? And I said, well, I can't explain it to you. I knew from a young age that I was different, didn't know what different meant, didn't know why I felt the way I did, why I had a whānau but yet felt so alone. It was always trying to fit into everyone's pockets, you know, people please or whatever. I was a circle trying to fit into a bloody square when actually I was quite perfect at being a circle. And it's just my analogy that I look at life now is that, you know, and women that come to me, I go, you are a circle trying to fit into a square. Why? And they've never heard it before. And I'm going, why are you trying to fit into everybody's square? What's wrong with you being a circle? And they look at me and they go, I've never heard of that. And I said, because now you're thinking, why are you trying to be a circle into a square? What's wrong with how beautiful and magical you are, just the way you are, and perfect in every way? And I see the light bulb go on. And I said, because they've made you want to fit into that, pushing you in there. You don't need to be in there. So that was how I, you know, that I was always, I was fine just as I was. But, you know, as we know, when you're more of an empath and you're more connected, they try and break you down. And for some reason, adults feel threatened by a child that moves differently and has questions that I can't answer, so they straight away just knock them down, and or they don't know how to answer. Just being in the space, I just knew it. Just thought, oh my God, this is so right. Listening to the way you speak and the things you were sharing, a deep part of me knew it already, but it just needed some way of flourishing and coming out. You understand what I mean? And that it's always been there. It just needed to come out of me instead of holding it in. And that's what this whole journey's been about, is just, it's there, it's always been there, but it just needed a way of moving and flowing outwardly in a way that's, yeah, amazing, magical.
How did the transition from learning miri and kopi to practicing it, how was that transition for you?
Was different, because when you step out from a space where you're in a group and you're learning, all your essence in your brain, mine were like pinging off like a satellite, and I'm going ping, 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 and that, and then you go home and it's like, holy shit, now you've got to try and process all this and bring it in a way that doesn't take away from the essence of what you're being taught, but create something that is innately who you are. Living in Busselton, I felt isolated in that aspect, but it's something that I had to work through and accept that, you know, you've chosen to step into this. So when you can step into the waka. But I had to look at it and go, so here I am. I've got my space. So how can I make everything that I'm learning a natural flow for me? And I've never been a person to follow the rules. I've always been a bit of a rule breaker. And I just felt your way of working was really unique and beautiful, because even though we still had to learn the different components of parts of the body, you also made it okay that you don't have to follow. It's important that you understand how the body works, where the main tapu points are, and that was really essential to know all that. But it's okay if you are drawn to this part. No one's going to growl at you or say, no, you can't do that. Just go there. And that's what the change was for me. And it was just trusting being at home with no one really to tap into in the early stages. So it was a learning for me and a trusting of what I'm bringing. And that took a little bit. Nursing, I know. I've been doing it for nearly 40 years, you know. Stepping into this, I still feel like that novice. And I think that, you know, even in the nursing, there's this novice to expert. And that's where I put myself. Also, I transfer that over that novice to expert. So I'm still, maybe not so much the novice, but sometimes I still feel that novice. Will I ever get to be an expert? It doesn't matter whether I'm an expert or not. It's what you weave in between that. So yes, that's still feeling like I'm just that little wee baby just trying to figure things out. But making it yours is the way that you spoke and said it's okay. Everything's okay to be who you are. And that was the first time I'd ever heard anybody, when I'd trained for a modality or anything, it was always about, this is how you do it, that's how you put it in. And it was always, I just want to get out of this what I want to get out of it, and then I'll do whatever. But the way you spoke and said, just bring you. This, you need to learn this, but you weave with you whatever you're drawn to. Just respect the body, respect who you are, and respect the space. And then it was just that subtle transition that made it clearer for me that I can bring all this together, what I've learnt plus what I am standing in as a practitioner, and bring it and weave it a tansy kind of way.
Me with the sparkle.
Magic. You know, and I think for me, the more I am just naturally, it's just aligned. I think you have to experience different things when you work in a beautiful spiritual space. And I've learnt some hard lessons, but they've been good lessons for me. You know, about spiritual resistance or energy resistance, and the yucky feels that you get, is it your feels or is it their feels?
Do you want to talk more about that?
Yes, so for me, I think the first experience I had was when I used to do readings, sort of stepping into that readings, and I remember very clearly that a woman came and she said, oh, I'm really open, you know, I'm really open to what was happening. And as soon as she sat down, I just thought, oh my God, this is going to be hard. I could just feel something just was not right. And I'd never come against that before. I didn't know what it was. I just had to keep going, can you just help me out? Can you just help me out here? Something's not quite right. And I just couldn't seem to get through. And it just did not feel comfortable. And then I kept hearing this voice going, just honor it. Don't. And that. And in the end, I'd spent like 20 minutes trying to get some kind of energy, but there was just nothing coming. And she kept saying, I'm really in it. I'm going, no, you're not. You are not. You're convincing yourself. So in the end, I just said to her, you know what? I'm going to give you your money back, because I said, you're telling me you're open. And I was very direct. I wasn't rude. And I said, you're not open. I said, you've come here to suss me out. I know you have. And she, that woman sat there and looked at me, and I said, because all I'm getting from you is barrier, and I'm not sure where you are in your life, but I'm not playing your game. So please take your money. And that was really big for me. But I felt a bit of a, not a failure. I sort of thought, shit, you know, but there was a lesson in that not everyone's going to, they're going to come to you. Oh, yes, hallelujah, I'm in the space. And you're going to get them on the table with people. When I've worked with them, you can feel. And I understand for some, it's the fear. So identifying, is it really resistance they're putting up or is it actual fear? How can I break down that fear, reassuring them that they're safe, that whatever you're holding on to, I've got you. But also saying, am I bringing my shit into here? Is this what I'm picking up? I've got to just step away for a minute. Is this me? And then identifying, actually, no, it's not me. There's something going on here. There's no fast rule about those sorts of things. I think you just have to trust if you feel that there's a block and that it's causing you a bit of distress and that you need to just honour yourself and step away and just collect yourself and just say, look, I think today, you know, or whatever, because you've got to honour you and you've got to honour their body. The body's obviously not ready to release what they want to release. And you can stand and try and do whatever you want, you're going to get the same resistance. And sort of like the dark energies, I tend to not step into that, but I'm not ignorant of the dark, you know, those energies. But I always just, when I feel them stepping in, I just say, and I just bring in the light. And it's just an experience. If I'm starting to get the bit of taste in my mouth and I want to spit and stuff, I'm going, no, I need to step back and I just need to sit for a minute and just see where this is going or if I even want to go there, because you still have to honour yourself.
Yeah.
Because it's heavy, energetic work. It's just a process. And you know when you're ready to step into it. And I used to do a bit of work on the side where I used to work with lost souls. So it was a teacher I had who was teaching me to sort of know to tap in. And she was really amazing. And she said, oh, I'd like you to start working with lost souls. I'd never heard of lost souls before. And I sort of said, lost souls, what's that? And she said, that's souls that are passed on but haven't transcended. Wow, man, this is like next level, and I was in it. I needed to learn, because I tend to jump sometimes. What I learned from it, so there's a way of connecting, crossing over, connecting in the space, but when you work in that space or working with lost souls, you have to be in a space of non-judgmental, because some of those souls that are coming in will connect with you have done some pretty shit thing, pretty horrible thing. And that's a lot of holding energy work, and you've got to be in that zone. And it was from working with a lot of lost souls that I learned to identify the dark energies. Do I want to let them in? Do I want to work with them? And I remember doing one. I thought, you know what, I need to do this because I can't keep pushing away. So I actually let one of those energies in while I was working. And then listening to their echoes, their story themselves, that darkness slipped away, so they hold it as they pass, they hold the energy they're in, and then by letting them come through, it was actually they just needed to share how they were feeling. And I know for some it's probably hard to understand when you think, lost souls, do they actually talk to you? Well, yes, they do. And acknowledging, I'm not here to judge you. Yes, I know what you've done, because they used to show me, I could see the pictures of what had happened. And that was often quite hard. So it's identifying sort of the lighter spirits and the darker and the deeper energies and that come in. So that was a huge and massive learning, but a lot of energy work. And then I stepped away from that for a bit. But that's helped me learn too, when on the body you can pick up those non-sovereign energies.
I love that point, because I think a lot of people think they have to deal with everything. And I do think we have a real choice around what we do and don't read with. Yeah. And how you described that was really good.
So I think it's always about choice, but you've always got to honour who you are too. You can't be the master of everything, because at the end of the day, the two people you're going to be detrimental to is yourself, the person that's on the table. So by just saying, today's not a good day, let's just take 5 minutes and let's just maybe call today. And that's no reflection of you as a practitioner at all, or wherever you are in your journey. It's just life, because we come up against those in life as well. So you just got to identify them. But it's been a learning for me in that way, and just bringing all those things that I've learnt into what I do and how I feel and see how we. That's it. It's imperfect, like me. Piece of art, you know, still working on it.
As we wind towards a close, is there anything that's sitting with you that we haven't spoken about or that you want to share?
I think it's just been lovely to be able to just share those different things and bring in the nursing and the spirituality and how it weaves. I just feel really humbled sometimes, and sometimes in that energy it can be really powerful, and it's just so powerful that sometimes I get a little bit, oh shit, that's so powerful. It just comes. And you're thinking, shit, where'd that come from? You know exactly. But, you know, but just to be so grateful that the women that come have never met me, but they feel safe, you know. And I think as practitioners, that's really powerful. It breaks down barriers that as much as it's beautiful on the table, I think they go hand in hand. But I'm just so deeply grateful that I can step into this beautiful space and just be who I am without feeling awkward. I'm so grateful to be able to support you and your vision and your space, and I get so much from it as well, and I never take it for granted that it's all learning and giving and sharing. So I just feel really, really lucky that I'm able to be at this time in this world, in this space.
Thank you so much for everything you do for me and seeing me. I really deeply value it.
Well, I love you so much, and I just can feel your vision and see it. Yeah, so it's very important that you get to be able to live that. And in whatever small capacity I can do, you know, whether it's for a short time or a long time, it doesn't matter, just being in that space and being able to drive you forward in whichever way and learn as I go along. And that's, so yeah, I'm very grateful. And I love you. I love you so much. So
I love you too. Thank you. Oh, I'm going to cry. I feel emotional now. Yeah. Thank you.
Wow.
You're
welcome. I'm feeling a bit emotional myself.